My name's Stephen Neal, pastor at Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And my name's Stephen Watkinson, church planter in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Souls.
So last time we were talking a bit about priorities and priorities for our children. And we were thinking and reflecting on that and going that often in the church, the priorities that we set or have been set split life into the spiritual and the non-spiritual. And your priority should be for the spiritual. So we make a priority of reading our Bible and prayer and evangelism. And those are good things. And then we somewhat look down on the unspiritual. We maybe think they're worldly or sort of sinful in some ways. And sometimes that stuff is weird. So it's true that some things are worldly, but we might kind of say, oh, we look down on listening to music, going out and socializing, having a meal at a restaurant or something like that. You know, those things are of less significance, and we need to be more focused on the spiritual. And where do you think, is that a good division or is that a bad division?
I don't think it's a biblical division. And I would go as far as to say it is borderline heretical. So it's quite a Gnostic way of thinking about the world, isn't it? Or is it Greek dualism or whatever? I don't know which one. I'm not always entirely sure what the difference is. But between the two of them, it's one or other of those where we're kind of splitting everything into good and bad for one thing. I guess that's a dualistic type thinking.
Then you're splitting into spiritual and material, which is more than Gnostic.
And it's spiritual good, material bad, which is more Gnostic. And even then, actually, sometimes a little bit Gnostic in the kind of, I can't quite read this in the Bible, but if you ask the right teacher or you ask the right person or you speak to the right people, they'll explain properly how and why this is a right and proper and reasonable application of the things that are written down there. And so I think it can end up in that sort of area too. I think it's a total denial of God's sovereignty over the entire universe anyway. So everything that the Lord has created is good. Everything that doesn't mean it hasn't been tainted with sin, but everything God created was good. And, you know, we can enjoy God's good gifts to us. In fact, Not only can we, but we should. You know, I think I argued recently that teetotalism is potentially a denial of God's good gifts to us. You know, based on what the Psalms say, where it's quite clear the Lord gives, wheat and he gives grapes, but it's very definite in the Psalms that the Lord has given oil and wine and bread, and they are his good gifts to enjoy. And we'd like to overlook very quickly when Isaiah says, woe to those who call good evil and evil good. We're very quick to say people in our culture call evil good. So we go, there's people who get abortions and they're saying abortion's an actively good thing. They're calling evil good. We're very quick to denounce that. But we overlook those who call good evil, which is what we do a lot in the church by saying, well, that's wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong, when actually not only are they not wrong of themselves anyway, but some of them are actively things the Lord has expressly said are good gifts for us to enjoy. So again, I think there is a Gnosticism underlying that, where sometimes we look at sort of social problems and go, too much of something causes problems, which it can do, obviously, but by that, looking at that, we go, and therefore we just keep away. Well, I think Galatians speaks into that specific issue, and it's quite clear, just keeping away. It talks about those who are ascetic, which is basically keep away, don't look, don't touch, don't taste.
Colossians, yeah.
sorry, that was Colossians, yeah. But Galatians is talking about asceticism. But it's that same idea of, oh, there's a problem, and we just keep totally away from it. Whereas actually scripture would say, no, there's a problem because people are misusing a good gift, which is a slightly different emphasis. And again, it seems to be underlying it, a sort of Gnosticism that says, well, that's kind of material bad stuff. We're just better not touching it, better keeping away from it. Whereas God gives us those things to enjoy. He gives them to us as good gifts. In fact, he even commands us at times to enjoy them. And we spurn them because, no, they're not spiritual. Well, ironically, that's not a very spiritual position.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So Colossians is quite, but I was, you know, you say you should point me to that. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because it has all this thing about, you know, special days and Sabbaths and new moons. You know, you've got all this sort of what is kind of ascetic kind of sort of legalism. And Paul basically goes, yeah, useless. and then, you know, and then they have all the don't touch and all that kind of thing. And it's just, I think it's funny, isn't it? So we spot it fairly clearly in other Christian traditions or whatever you want to call it. Like we'd see it in, say, Roman Catholicism and go, oh, look, what a terrible, what a terrible thing, etc. And then we build it in. And I think we build it in evangelicalism, we've built it into our kind of our holiness, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Where, so you boost your holiness by doing spiritual things. And it's not kind of having special, well, it might, in some cases it is having Sabbaths and things, isn't it? But it's often by the kind of expressing your, you know, it's by showing how keen you are as a Christian. It's the books you've read. It's the quiet times you've had, the prayer sessions you've had, whatever it is.
It's the keen Christian syndrome, isn't it? Where you've got your Christians and you've got your keen Christian. You've got sort of first tier and second tier Christians, basically, haven't you?
And equally those first tier, it's not just that they've done stuff, but they've turned their back on stuff that is okay, but it's not the best. Mm. It's not the best use of your time. You know, it's not the best use of your money. You know, the best use is to do X, Y, and Z. And often you're right. It is the thing, like, I mean, it's often very po-faced as well, isn't it? It's basically the best use is not to enjoy yourself.
But then frequently, of course, people make exceptions for the things they enjoy. So I've lost count of the number of times I've heard people say stuff about music and how terrible and worldly and awful it is whilst listening to classical music. And that classical music's apparently okay, you know, but all other music's worldly. And when you press into why, it's nothing biblical, because of course it's not there. But it's stuff like, oh, well, you know, the way they live and the way they act, those bands over there. And like, have you actually read up about any of those composers? I mean, they're not great.
it's funny. I remember very much, like, as a teenager looking at that and thinking, this is weird. So you learn a bit about Beethoven and went, okay. Now I get it, you could kind of go, well, you can listen to Bach, like Bach was a good Christian man. I think Brahms was as well, but I'm not sure about that. But you know what I mean, you've got to really narrow it down quite significantly.
But then that would also presumably then mean that anyone who's a Christian in a rock band, that'd be okay.
Yeah, presumably.
But it never was.
Well, it's funny. So there was a little bit of that in my kind of context where people kind of go, oh, is so-and-so a Christian? You know, you can know this kind of thing. And it's that unwillingness to go, God's sovereign over creation and all good gifts. And yeah, everything is tainted. And yeah, it is true that if someone is living a million miles from God and creating art, then their art is going to be tainted. But that doesn't mean there isn't joy to be, you know, I mean, you start going into weird land, don't you? If you kind of go, like, you're not going to, like, accept the fruits of medicine because, you know, the person who discovered X, Y, and Z, you're not going to use a computer because, frankly, Alan Turing was a homosexual. And, you know, do you know what I mean? He's like the mathematical basis of all computing.
But that sort of dualism, you see, it always ends up here because it's just black and white. They're either good or they're bad. And good or bad. And you think, but nobody's that. I mean, there's no room for common grace. So unbelievers being able to do stuff that is good because of common grace. And there's no room for total depravity where believers will do wrong things because we haven't been perfectly sanctified yet. And so nobody's totally good and nobody is totally bad in that sense. And yet that sort of Gnostic thinking basically says they are.
Oh, and so what we're doing is we set these kind of, we're trying to set these sort of safe boundaries, aren't we? And we're doing it we're doing it foolishly. Like nothing is safe in that sense. And nothing is totally gone some things are totally gone, but obviously there are things that you can't engage with. But
so given that then, Stephen, that leads to an interesting question, because we've said all things God is sovereign over. We've said there are good things to enjoy. So can you explain, based on all of that, why it might not be appropriate then to go and get absolutely hammered down the pub and then go and enjoy a wonderful time down the local brothel? Why would those things be an issue? If God's sovereign, we don't believe in this sort of Gnostic thing that we've been saying is wrong, and no one's totally bad, no one's totally good. The Bible even says sex and drink are both good gifts from God. Why not just enjoy those things like that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it shouldn't be that hard, should it? So we don't set the boundaries. God sets the boundaries. God set the boundaries in his word. And I think one of the problems is that what we do is set loads of boundaries beyond his word. So the reason you don't go down the brothel is because God set boundaries in his word for where sex should be. And it's within marriage. The reason that we don't go and get hammered is that God has set boundaries about enjoying his good gifts, and drunkenness is going over those boundaries.
But what we do is we go, so we tend to go wrong in the opposite direction. So that would be to say there is a good gift and those two things would be to abuse it. But what we often do in the church is go, that's a good gift, or that's the thing that's often abused, therefore we don't do it at all. Sex is kind of now dirty and wrong, full stop, and drink is wrong and no one should ever have any. That's kind of the sort of knee-jerk response we tend to get in the church, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And don't get me wrong, I do think there are difficult calls. Like,
I don't think the brothel one's difficult, Steve.
No, that is not difficult.
That's
I am
straightforward.
With you on that. The question of where you put yourself in a situation, what really happens is that we realize that there are temptations to go over the boundaries. And so what we do is we set a load of boundaries further back, so that we don't get tempted to go over the actual boundary.
Which is Pharisaism, isn't it? That's
yeah, I think it is. And I think you can see how it feels like it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense because it, I just think you go back to what Paul says in Colossians, where he says it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't help. And so, you know, we've got to be, there is complexity. There's the complexity around our consciences and not breaking our consciences. So, and it does seem to me that the conscience in that feels like the conscience feels like it's gone over a boundary that isn't a boundary.
I want to come back to that conscience question in a minute.
I think there's care to be taken for the individual in that. There's care to be taken for other individuals. But I think setting rules that aren't rules, I mean, you've just got to hold on to the fact that Paul says that's useless. So stick with the rules and the boundaries that God has set and don't make useless ones that actually lead us. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We then take those rules and turn them into a higher spirituality. So it's a kind of pride thing. And like you say, it's sort of Gnostic pride thing.
Yeah, the conscience thing I just wanted to pick up on is the way you were talking there sounded a bit like some people feel like this is a bit wrong and they don't want to do it because it that feels not right to them. I just think that's a total misapplication of what conscience actually is. You know, when Martin Luther said, "My conscience is captive to the word of God," he wasn't saying, "Oh, I just kind of feel God's word is best."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're often trained, aren't we, to think, a friend of mine said this not long ago, and I've not heard anyone put it better. We're often trained to think of our conscience like Jiminy Cricket, you know what I mean? Just like a little voice on our shoulder going, "Don't do that." That's not what conscience is. I mean, conscience is actually to do with your mind and to do with what you actually firmly believe to be true. So someone can't say, "Oh, my conscience won't allow me to do that," and you go, "Why not?" and they go, "I just feel it's wrong," and you go, "Well, look at the word. What does the word say?" And they go, "Well, I'm convinced it's not in the word." Well, you may still feel a bit uneasy, but if in your mind you're convinced the word doesn't say it, that's not your conscience. Your conscience is what you firmly believe to be true, not what you feel, which could be the result of all sorts of things like your tradition and your upbringing and all sorts of things like that. And so I want to be quite careful when we say, you know, do we have to take account of sensitive consciences? Yes, we do. But a sensitive conscience isn't one where someone's going, "Oh, I just feel this isn't right, but I can't really defend it." A soft conscience, which is often how it's taught about. It's like, "I don't like this. Why not? Let's look at the scriptures together. I'm convinced you've shown me from the scriptures this isn't a problem, but I still feel this is an issue, and you now have to bend to my conscience." Well, actually, we don't. That's not what conscience is.
I suppose you're more thinking along the lines of someone, you know, you might look at the alcohol one and go, "Look, I know that drunkenness shouldn't happen. And my application of that is that, I don't know, maybe because of who I am, if I go to the pub and start, I will get drunk. Therefore, I won't go to the pub." Now, if someone is doing that, I'm okay with that. And I'm not going to try and force them to go to the pub. But I also don't want them to say the godly thing in general is not to go to the pub. Yes.
But that's the thing, isn't it? They're two different things. So their conscience is not saying it's wrong to go to the pub. What they're saying is, "I feel it'd be unhelpful for me to go to the pub," which is not...
Well, there's a sort of sense of my application of the word of God is. And I think that's okay, so long as you've got to be really careful at that point around this questions of generalizing the application. So that application might be an accurate application for you. You know, and it is fair enough. There are people, I think, who shouldn't go to the pub. And there are people who it's fine. And you just have to kind of, it's wrong for the people for who it's fine to kind of go, "Oh, come along, you should come. It's be good for you," or, you know, and all that kind of thing, when it's not.
Yeah.
And it would be wrong for the person who's not going, "You mustn't go to the," you know, so it's the stuff around that, isn't it? But yeah, and I think that's probably where some of our problems kick in, isn't it? Where we sort of generalize true applications that aren't general. And that is quite hard. It's quite hard as a preacher, that, isn't it? So I think we easily want to get punchy with our application. And our punchy application is probably legalistic.
Can be.
Do you know what I mean about that, though? So you kind of want to say something strong because you think people need to hear it. But actually, I mean, I can think of a context where I think a church really needed to hear some pretty strong stuff about alcohol because there were a lot of people drinking far too much. You have to be quite careful how you give that application, because you're right to say that, but not right. You have to be really careful about not putting rules in place that aren't biblical.
And not everyone in the room will be
it's
in
true.
A position. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you're doing that, I mean, you just have to use a lot of if then sort of clauses, don't you? If you are doing A, B, and C, then X, Y, and Z.
Then don't.
Yes, exactly. So it's more that, isn't it?
But it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, because you can go the freedom way. I mean, I've seen people go the freedom way with that. It's the kind of Roman stuff, isn't it? Like using freedom as a license to sin. And I have seen people do that with the kind of, you know, because I am free, you can't tell me X, Y, and Z. You do see that happen. Some of that is about your church culture and background. There's definitely this culture within a lot of contexts around this sort of holiness and spirituality and Gnosticism. Mm. I wonder if there are contexts where there's a real pushback on that and kind of going, no, I've now learned that I'm free and therefore I'm going to just do all this stuff and I'm not going to feel guilty about it. Yeah. And then it can go wrong as well.
I mean, I think it's like Luther's drunk man on a horse, isn't it, thing, where I think if you've been brought up in a fairly legalistic type background, it's not uncommon to find people go, I know this isn't right, and I can see this isn't right, so I want to correct that. But very rarely do they correct either marginally where necessary or correct to a perfect middle balance. They tend to just sort of overcorrect. And yeah, I've seen plenty of people go, I'd still love the Lord, I still love Jesus, but I was always taught this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong. And it's clearly that's not right. And so off I go and I just become totally licentious. Yeah. And it's kind of this overcorrection of, I was always told these things, everything was wrong. I don't think they're wrong. I'm now going to do all these things. And then they kind of do them so much that it then pushes into the kind of thing to go, no, Jesus does say that's a gift, but you're now abusing the gift. I think that's where I think you find balance. You go, look, people who are saying everything's wrong, well, it's not, because Jesus specifically says these things are gifts from God. There are good gifts in the world to be enjoyed, and actually we glorify God more when we enjoy his good gifts, and it's dishonoring to him for us to spurn them and say they're not good. At the same time, when we abuse his good gifts by overusing them or overindulging or whatever, then we have fallen into sort of licentiousness, and we are enjoying a good gift, but we're enjoying it to a degree where it's either making us ill or causing us problems or whatever. And I think that's the balance you need to find. What are the gifts that Jesus says are good, which is most, to be honest, most things in the world that most people might enjoy are usually good gifts from God. And then you're saying, and what is an appropriate degree and way in which to enjoy them? There is a balance somewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a warning, isn't it, where we have this temptation to be Pharisaic and Gnostic and kind of special, like, rules that we put in place to make you more spiritual. The warning that, and I think both of us would talk to experience of seeing this, there's you're potentially setting people up for a much bigger fall. Because they will, some people hold in that all their lives, for sure. But loads of people, especially if they grow up in it, will see through it at some point. And they'll see through it for whatever reason, but you are potentially setting them on a trajectory in exactly the direction that you think you're protecting them from. Mm. So you think you're putting boundaries in to protect people from going over the line in whatever good gift. And what actually happens is that because they see they're not really biblical boundaries, you set them on a pendulum swing or a trajectory that is going exactly over the boundary that you thought you were stopping them from going over.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's this Pharisaical thinking of we hedge the hedges, you know, fence the fences sort of thing, where it's okay, this is where the line is, let's make this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. And as you say, I think once you unpick one of those, it's very, very hard to find a balance, because I've seen people do it with sex, so they come from a background that's effectively telling them almost even sex in marriage is
bad,
a little bit, you know, not something good. And so because they grew up in that and it's seen as so terrible, when they see through that, it suddenly it just goes nuts when they come out of it. I've seen it with drink most commonly, where people are told drink is wrong all the time. Don't touch it. They come to a view that it's actually okay because Jesus did it. But then no one's actually ever taught them or shown them what might be moderate. And they just go nuts and they can't stop themselves. And it's very, very damaging. And I think it does more damage than we realize a lot of the time.
Yeah. And, it's tricky, isn't it? And you understand. I mean, I don't know that anyone growing up in Christian context is not going to have experienced this. Because I think the immediate reaction, for example, to the sexual revolution was to hedge the hedges in the church. And so, people from the, 60s onwards who've grown up in the church have had that experience. And you look at it, don't you? All the stuff that's come out about the purity culture and things like that, where, it wasn't all bad, but it was doing a lot of this. And of course, it's just kind of, it twisted people's understanding of stuff. And, I just think one of the things is it sucks joy, doesn't it? I think it tells you that God is the headmaster kind of figure. It tells you that Christianity is about not doing things and not enjoying God's good gifts. And I think when you do that, the problem is the swing too far the other way is a swing into a kind of false joy, isn't it? So it's a swing into particularly our 21st century kind of experience and the fun and the hedonistic stuff. And it's a failure, isn't it, to get people's joy lined up with God's view of joy. And that's kind of sad, isn't it? I think that it's kind of the way that if you turn Christianity into such a joyless thing, that it actually feels better to be so far outside of it that's where people go.
Basically what we're teaching people is being in the world is more fun and more enjoyable and nicer than loving the Lord. Yeah. Which is surely counter to what the gospel actually says. At the same time, when we go the other way on it, we basically say, yes, God is very happy and pleased with just the utter destruction, abusing his gifts reeks across the world, and that's not any better.
That's awful, isn't it? So one way or another, we end up in this situation of destroying joy instead of kind of, and I get it. I mean, it's easy to swing. I mean, we all do it. We all swing on the pendulum, but being a bit more laser sighted of actually to truly live God's way is to live the most joyful way. And to do things that undercut God's joy is awful. And to do things that send you into the world's perversions of God's joy is awful. We've got to kind of hold that line, haven't we?